You've got the concept and you've got the passion, but where do you go from here? Womenpreneur Strategies for Success is here to help you learn the exact tools, mindset shifts, and proven growth strategies to build the business you want while still having a life. You've got the will. Let us help you find the way. With your host, successful entrepreneur, Smita Singh.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Womenpreneur Strategies for Success. Today I'm talking to Joya Das. She is a super, super strong South Asian woman who has seen domestic violence when she was younger. And as she says it, she sat on the bicycle and kept wanting to pedal and did not stop pedaling. Joya Das was one of the first South Asian females to be seen on mainstream television in the United States. She's been a business anchor for major networks for the last 15 years, including CNN, ABC, and Bloomberg. She can currently be seen delivering live hourly reports from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange for NY1 News and CBS. Joya is currently using her 15 years in television production to support her women's networking initiative called Lady Drinks, which champions the South Asian female entrepreneur. Her sharp interviewing skills and on-air snarkiness came across in her live engagements as she's a frequent speaker, MC, and moderator. In 2014, Joya was named the executive director of the South Asian International Film Festival, presented by HBO. She also helms a documentary production company that bears her name. I really enjoyed talking with her, and I enjoyed all of her examples that she's drawn from all of her experiences, and especially loved her reiterating the fact for delegating, especially for women entrepreneurs, and that confidence is contagious. So don't be afraid to ask what you want. Her tip about developing a personal advisory board is top notch. Reach out to people and talk to them. Ask them about what you're doing, if it's a product or business. Ask them questions and they will give you the feedback. So today, don't forget to subscribe, review, and rate the podcast. If you can hear a little raspiness in my voice, that's because I went to a karaoke party this weekend and I had a little bit too much fun. So hopefully by the next time you hear me, I will feel better. But I do want to know what's holding you back in your business. So text me at bold, B-O-L-D, or email me at smita@womenpreneursuccess.com and tell me what's holding you back in your business. So I really want to hear from you. Let's get Joya Das. Hi, Joya. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. We are very excited to have you, and you're doing some amazing things in the woman entrepreneurial world. And I want to get you out there to tell you what you're doing so more people, more women can take advantage of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much of my everyday. I feel like I'm talking about it every day, which is part of the reason it's probably gotten to where it is.
Absolutely. So let's start from your background. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you come through all the way to Lady Drinks?
So I am a television anchor here in New York City by trade, and it is something that I'd wanted to do since I was 4 years old. And I was born to immigrant parents. My parents are from Calcutta and Myanmar. And so you can only imagine that conversation and how it went over like a lead balloon when I said that this is something I wanted to do. My mother actually secretly had been sort of nurturing my writing capabilities and would scour the newspapers every day looking for writing contests, essay contests, poetry contests, spelling contests to enter me into. So to me, a life without writing would be like a life without oxygen. There was just no doubt in my mind that this is what I was going to enter into as a career. But when I entered into college, you know, my dad gave me the traditional Indian father line, which is, of course, you're going to become a doctor. And to make a long story short, they ultimately had not saved for college either. So, I know this show is about fundraising, but I think that was my first foray into sticking my hand out and asking for money. I really had to plead a case and embarked on a very aggressive letter writing campaign to fund my education. And ultimately, there was a doctor in Minnesota who ended up funding half of it.
Wow.
A very expensive private school. And then I struck a deal with the devil and sat down with the college and jerry-rigged loans and a contract together so I could get through the rest of it. Now, an important piece of that that I need to include here is that, you know, because I'm also from an immigrant family, an important piece of part of my story is that I was also raised in a home of domestic violence. So it was very important for me when I left for college that I needed to keep that forward momentum going. And so once I was out, I was not going back. So at the time when people, I remember my friends being like, gosh, you know, like, how did you do this? And I was like, well, there was this thing, there was this little like pedal that I was cycling on that because I just knew I needed to keep moving forward. I couldn't go back. Wow. So that was, you know, that was point number one. I made it to New York, became a television anchor, was on ABC Network. And then I was like, you know what? This isn't feeding me anymore. News is wonderful. I still do it. I'm still an anchor today. But, you know, you get it out every day. It's down and dirty. You're just getting it out and not stopping to make it beautiful. And I realized in 2009 that it wasn't the kind of stories that I wanted to be telling. I also had come to a moment of reckoning because I felt like I'd given up so much as a woman. I'd given up so much as a South Asian woman, having raised myself at that point, that I needed to, the crime didn't quite fit the punishment. I needed to do something bigger with my skill set. So that's when I decided to start my documentary production company. I took a crew of five guys to India to shoot my first feature length documentary because nobody was just going to like up and decide that they were going to give a TV anchor a production job plus a director job. And so that was really my second sort of stint in fundraising because, you know, I was at a Tisch NYU film student meet and greet this past week, and they were like, well, how did you fund your first film? I'm like, I just threw a bunch of events and invited friends, invited family, got a band, got food sponsor, got drink sponsors, and raised the $26,000 to be able to get my crew to India. And then when I got back, I did another series of events, raised the money to edit it. So that was like, you know, my second sort of foray, as I said, into fundraising. And then finally, that film led to a 3-year engagement with the Rockefeller Foundation, where I was punching out a series of mini documentaries about their philanthropic work. And so at that juncture, I really felt like I needed to take on a partner because I was still on the air 50% of the time. And so I'd taken on a partner and someone by the name of Greta Knudsen. And Greta had come from Toronto, and she had great success in starting Lady Drinks in Toronto. It was started in response to the recession, and it was a way for women in film and TV to network and get jobs. So when she and I went to City Hall to register the name of our production company, she said, Joya, could we start Lady Drinks in New York? And I said, sure, it's fine. Not realizing that in July of 2012, when we started our inaugural event, that somewhere between 40 and 300 South Asian girls were showing up, because this is the first time that I'd been taken down from behind the glass TV screen and made accessible. And what I didn't know is there was a whole generation of South Asian girl that had grown up watching me on TV. I was always very unapologetic about my story and having to do it by myself. And so this brand of girl was now coming to share that they too are now doing something outside of doctor, lawyer, and engineer. And so that was July of 2012. I'm now 3 years in. I have to fundraise every single day in order to be able to put on all my monthly events. But I'm also very vocal about it, and I'm talking about it on social media. I'm talking about it at events. So people know about it, and so they're investing partially in me, but they're also investing in the mission, which I'm constantly talking about, and it's out there in a critical way.
Absolutely. I love it. That's such a powerful journey. And, you know, you're the epitome of an entrepreneurial woman because you're bold and fearless and you're strong. I love that. So you've been pretty much fundraising all your life, all your adult life.
Looking back,
I don't know
that at the time, you know, in college when I was just trying to keep my head above water, or when I had my film and I just needed to raise the money to get my crew to India, I don't know if I thought of it that way. It was just more like I sat down, I made a list of steps, and step one was I need money. And how am I going to, you know, raise that?
Mm-hmm. And how receptive were people to giving you, you know, that money, when, especially when you're moving from news anchor to, production. When you're doing something new and you don't really have a track record in that particular field.
I think that I was very clear about my mission. Mm-hmm. I was very clear about my goal. And my goal at the time was that this film was going to ultimately become a fundraising vehicle for a charity. It was not that I was going to make some film that was going to go to the Oscars or a film that was going to, yes, it was going to launch my second Avatar, but every single sort of documentary or film project I've engaged in was always allied with a greater social purpose. And as I said, this whole time that I'd been on TV, I'd always been very sort of passionate about and very vocal about my journey and that I had given up a lot to get to this point. And so this was going to be the next chapter. And I had a track record of following through. And I think people knew that.
Right. And I think also, when you launch Lady Drinks, I think you are a role model to a lot of younger South Asian women that are, this is probably the first steps they're taking into this entrepreneurial world. So I think that's a very powerful, way that you're helping them. I think that's awesome. All right. So let's talk about top three challenges that you see that women entrepreneurs face.
Well, number one, and I talk about this so much, I give a lot of talks about this, but number one is confidence. Asking for what women want, tooting their horn and being very, very elegant and being very graceful, but being firm and saying, this is what I'm doing and this is what I'm about and telling their story. People are like, oh, but nobody would want to hear it. Of course we want to hear it. Of course we want to be able to hear your story. Everyone wants to hear your story. It's just about whether or not you have the confidence to tell it and whether or not whether you believe in yourself. And, that sort of passion or that sort of directness is what's the word I'm looking for? I think it's contagious. When that person standing across the room from you or talking to you at a cocktail party is engaged and they want to know, they want to hear your story, you'll know it. Right. And I think also realizing that there's no plan B. Plan A has to work. So I think that's an important piece of the confidence. I think the second piece is breaking through. I mean, I have a lot of women in my membership, and I think making meaningful revenue and breaking through on that level is a big problem. Part of it is that they may or may not have the right product. They may not have the right marketing. Do they even know how to pitch? Have they devoted time to really look at the marketplace and see if they have a great product fit? I had a gal, loads of people reach out to me on Facebook, and a lot of women from India will reach out and be like, well, I'm a jewelry designer. I'm like, yeah, but there's like 800 of them here.
That's right.
Have you researched the New York market and figured out a way that you're going to stand out from all the noise? I think. And then there are some women who have broken through. They've broken through. They've made a decent amount of revenue, but they're now asking the question, how can I stay at that level? The consumer is very fickle. They'll move on to the next thing. And how do I stay that way? I think, that's a big piece of it. And then the final thing I'll say in terms of challenges is time management. Of course, we talk about work-life balance as mothers and business women. That's a big one. That's part of the zeitgeist. People talk about it all the time. But I actually want to talk about, delegating. And I'm guilty of it too, but people think they have to do everything. And believe it or not, there are resources out there that don't cost that much that you can use and leverage to build your business. You can go on Elance and find someone to answer your phone for $1 a call, or you can go on TaskRabbit and get somebody to pick up your dry cleaning. Like, you don't have to be superwoman, but you do need to learn how to delegate. And that all feeds into time management.
Yeah, I love that, because I think that's one big thing that I keep harping about is, the superhero syndrome. You don't have to do it all. One of the keys to, I teach systems and processes and building that in a business. I think that's the key to being able to do whatever you want to do. There was a point in my life, I have two kids. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I was running two businesses, and I would come home and I would cook dinner, right? And people would ask me, how did you do it? I'm like,
I set up my systems and processes, and I delegated what I needed to, and I worked it.
Yeah. And since this conversation is about raising funding, I mean, if you are going and formally seeking investor money, not everybody necessarily is receptive to a Lone Ranger. They want to see the leadership team that you have built around you to be able to bring this idea or service or product forward.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. Building that team is also very important because you need to know what are your weaknesses that you could probably bring in and build that balanced team.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And tell me, Jaya, you've been, you know, fundraising since the beginning. So when do you think a woman entrepreneur should start looking for funding? Say I have an idea and I do have, you know, some kind of traction. People are saying, okay, great. Hey, that's awesome. I love this idea. When do I go about starting to say, all right, now I'm ready to take the next step. Let me get some funding for it.
Well, I think I would ask you, have you talked to 100 people about your idea? Have you talked to 100 people to kind of figure out the pitching marketplace and who you're going to pitch to and what kind of track record that particular VC firm may have? Or however you're going to skin the cat, whether you're going to go the crowdfunding route, whether you're going to apply for a business prize, whether you're going to do a friend and family round. Like, first of all, I want to know that you've talked to enough people and done your market data research about the product that you're about to launch or the service that you're about to launch and whether or not you have a unique value proposition. Because if you are releasing something or introducing something to market that there's already 3 other products out there, you've got to be prepared to be able to answer the question, well, what is going to make yours different? And if you're sort of deer in headlights, you don't even know that your competition exists or who your competitors are, then that's going to put you at a disadvantage. So I think it's so important to not only know your own space inside and out, but to also know who the competition is. And that can be achieved by reading trade journals or reading anything and everything that's in your industry space. And have you assembled a team, you know, whether it be in the way of an advisory board, whether it's a personal advisory board, you know, like what are you doing to be able to bring this idea forward with some mentors and some advisors around you that you can lean on? And I'm not saying they have to all be rocket scientists. It could be somebody that, hey, I have this T-shirt. I'm going to introduce it to market at $17. Can the market bear that? And in that regard, I have to kind of toot Lady Drink's horn because I think that has been created. You know, there's at least a woman that you can call in the group and say, hey, what do you think of this idea? And there are women that I've interviewed that, you know, were the pioneers when it came to being South Asian female entrepreneurs. And 8-10 years ago, they didn't have somebody they could turn to and ask a simple question like that. So I think those would be the things that I would probably most be keen to learn about a woman if she came to me and said she was looking for funding.
That's some great ideas.
There was and are you serious? I remember there was a woman who had a clothing line and she's like, well, please tell me how I can seek funding. I'm like, but you don't even have a website. Like, how do I even look at your clothes? She's like, well, I have a Facebook page. I'm like, no one's going to, I don't know how anyone would take you seriously if you don't have a website or at least a domain presence.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about this. What ways would you suggest the woman entrepreneurs to go about, you know, how do they go about reaching out to people and asking them or talking to them or getting feedback?
I mean, every day I'm on a listserv of so many different women entrepreneurial groups. You could just Google women entrepreneurial networking events, and there are so many in New York City and in the metro area. But if you're not in the metro area and you don't have access to an Elevate or a Lady Drinks or the New York Women's Foundation or Running with Heels, you know, which are there, you could go to an event every single night of the week and talk to people. So that's my first suggestion. The second one is that every city in the country has an accelerator or an incubator program. So, I mean, those are great conduits by which people are able to get some of the advice and some of the counsel that they need to be able to grow their business. For example, my friend Avani Patel, who founded a company that really nurtures clothing and apparel and jewelry designers. Her business is called Trendseeder, but she realized that there's a big gap. There's a lot of creative people that don't necessarily have the marketing savvy. So her company, Trendseeder, works to fill that gap. She, you know, has a qualification process to bring in the creative designers and apparel makers that she thinks are worthy and have you know, what looks like an investable sort of product, and then nurtures them through the Trendseeder program. It's, you know, there's a lot of education, and then I believe she's starting an accelerator or an incubator as well to be able to kind of take them into the final home stretch.
Great. So, and what do you think are maybe the biggest challenges that women face in the fundraising scene?
Well, first of all, there's just fewer women investors. I think they make about 4.4% of the industry. And then if you look at the number of women-led businesses that get VC funding, that's only about 4.2%. So in terms of like going to your own tribe to be able to seek funding, there's just fewer women investors, period. So I think that's a big one. I think women just, you know, to your point earlier, women don't know where to go to educate themselves or ask for information on how to raise money. And I don't think that every networking group is going to be perfect and not every experience is going to be perfect. But I think that talking to as many people as you can to be able to educate yourself on that is key. And there's just maybe no other way around it if you don't have access to a father or a role model that's going to teach you how to do that.
Right. Absolutely.
And I've said this a couple. In fact, you are going to, let's say, Target. Target gives away prizes for amazing business ideas or breakthrough ideas, is I think what they call it. But, you know, do your research. Has there been funding for a product or service like yours before awarded by a Target or a VC firm? Do they understand your space? For example, I have a friend in the city, Nicole Ponseca. She started two Filipino restaurants here in New York, and they're the only pure Filipino restaurant plays. But when she started out, she was an ad exec, you know, and she just wanted to find a Filipino place as a Filipino American herself to take clients. And that's when she decided that she was going to start up her own restaurant, but she knew nothing about the space. So she started moonlighting at night and just doing every single job at a restaurant just to be able to learn the industry. So, you know, she just made sure she knew her business inside and out. And even then, it was hard for her to find investors because she would go to investors and they'd be like, I don't know anything about Filipino food. Like, I've never even heard of it. I don't know what it is. So if you're going to educate people, like, you know, you've just got to be out there all the time. And then finally, I think the other big challenge is if you're going to take on a VC partner, have you really answered the questions about why you want them? Do you want them for strategic issues? Do you want them for operational issues? Do you want them to be silent partners and just kind of stay out of the way and just let you run it? I think those are kind of the things that you have to become clear about. It's not enough to just say, I want to go out and pitch for money.
Right. Absolutely. I think those are some really great points. And, you know, I think half the battle is won when we decide that this is what you're going to do, right? There's only plan A, like you said. There's no plan B.
Yeah.
So get out there and do it.
And I'm guilty of saying, oh, maybe I should just go back and get a corporate job because running Lady Drinks has not been an easy slog by no stretch of the imagination. And there are times that I've been broke and there have been times that I've been like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right. Absolutely. But it's that persistence, right?
Well, it's persistence. It's resilience. It's about, you know, taking those hits and getting up every day and just doing it again and doing it again and doing it again.
Absolutely. So tell me, Joya, you've seen so many women come to you with their ideas and you've seen them grow. You've probably seen, you know, some of them get funded. What do you think for a woman entrepreneur to keep in mind, you know, the three critical steps when they're going from idea phase to execution? What is it that is imperative to be sure that in your business you have this down pat?
Well, that you can do it now. There's never going to be any perfect time. You can afford it now. You know, it's part of the trend now too, to be investing in women-led businesses. I think there's some research by Google that said about like 30 women-led companies will probably have a return of about 35% on your investment. They're 12% more profitable than male-led companies. So the time is ripe as a woman to be starting a business. So you can do it now. You can afford to do it now. There are more female-led VC firms like Aspect Ventures and Cowboy Ventures. So, you know, that's not an excuse. The other thing is, you know, really doing some soul searching and taking some quiet time. I mean, you know, when I was transitioning from full-time anchor to what was I going to do next, I just, you know, took myself out of hectic New York, went to Calcutta and sat at my grandmother's house for 2 weeks and did nothing because I just needed that concentrated time to sit and think about what am I good at? What do I want to get out of this next business venture that I'm going to start? What do I even like to do? I mean, what am I passionate about? What would I learn to like to do? You know, and for the longest time, you know, my friends would say to me, Joya, I don't know about this whole journalism thing, but you are an awesome event planner, because I would always be planning events for my friends and big ones. And they're like, I don't know what this whole TV thing is, but you clearly need to become an event planner. And I'm like, no. You know, but I really had to kind of sit and give that some credence at that time. And lo and behold, that's what I'm doing. You know, I have a bigger mission, but event planning is a huge keystone of what I do every single day.
Tell us a little bit about Pitch to Media and Pitch to Retail. I think, is that what you're doing next?
Sure. So Pitch to Media actually happened in March, and so I should clarify that, you know, Lady Drinks is every month, but every event is different every month. And so for the month of March, we had shut down a store on Fifth Avenue, Joe Fresh, and we had five women pre-qualified to get up and pitch their business to a Marie Claire magazine or a Bloomberg TV or to a Channel 11. But the irony was that Channel 11, Marie Claire, and Bloomberg TV were actually the panelists. And they had 2 minutes to pitch, and then the panelists each got collectively 10 minutes to give them feedback on that pitch, and that all went down in front of a live audience of 127 women.
Nice.
So there was an educational component, and so even if you didn't have the cojones to necessarily get up and be one of the pitching parties, you got the benefits of being in the room and seeing somebody get up there and pitch and hearing the criticism that was levied against them or the praise.
Sure.
And so come May 7th, we're going to do Pitch the Money, which is very much in the Shark Tank-esque style of events, where five businesswomen are going to get up and pitch their business plans. And we've assembled a panel that's going to assess the viability of it and suggest next steps.
That's wonderful. And anybody can come in and apply for it if they want to?
Absolutely. After the show, I can send you the Google form that people can fill out to qualify. And I can send you the collateral on how to buy a ticket to the event if you just want to come and
sounds good.
Learn.
Sounds good. I think that's a great opportunity. I mean, especially if people are able to make it, even to just, like you said, sit down in the audience and learn it for your next step, right?
Yeah. And I should credit my partners at WomanCon, because this was actually an event that they had done at their conference back in September, and I was one of their panelists. And I asked them afterwards in the postmortem, what was your best event? And they were like, well, it was the one that you were involved in.
Right.
And so we found that seems to be that whole pitching idea seems to be working, because it gives everyone in the room a voice. You know, it's not
that
someone
right.
you don't just show up and get talked at.
That's right. Absolutely. And I think that's so true. I've been to so many pitching events here in Houston, and it's not only just the person who's standing there who's hearing from the panel, but also, like you said, the people, because you're like, oh, wait, I like that idea, but maybe they could do this or maybe they could add this. And you know, for your own idea, you can take away and think of the marketing ideas that you're getting. And yeah, definitely. I think it's a great educational environment.
Yeah. I mean, it was overwhelming, the amount of social engagement that we had afterwards from that event, too.
That's wonderful. Let's talk about some of the skills, Joya. What do you think women entrepreneurs ought to have, or maybe they need to develop as they're going?
You got to learn to delegate. You can't do everything by yourself. And I struggle with this myself, but you've got to be able to delegate and be able to hand off tasks after a while that aren't necessarily serving you. You've got to really sit down and take a look at what are you good at. So for me, I'm going to gala number like 475 tonight, but that's what I'm good at. I'm good at walking into a room and working it. And that is something only I can do because I was invited. But, you know, there's the marketing tasks and there's the fundraising tasks and everything else that I can now delegate to a little team that I've put together. And I have to empower them to be able to do those tasks and not sit there and micromanage. So I think that's key. Time management. Like, as women, I think we're conditioned to be pleasers and saying yes to everything. But I think the hardest muscle I have learned to develop in the last while is saying no. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a priority list of 5 things that I always have sitting in front of me. And at any given time, you can really only be focusing on 2 priorities at a time, if you're going to do them well anyway. And so you can only imagine the staggering amount of requests that come my way each day. And absolutely, I have to look at priority number 1 and priority number 2. And if that request does not, you know, filter through that lens and move that forward, then the answer is no. And just being unapologetic about that. Being flexible and adaptable. You know, I'll go back to the example of a woman in my membership who just saw this massive spike in her apparel sales. And then it ebbed away. And she's like, well, now what? What am I going to do? Like, how do I stay relevant? And I sent her a bunch of examples of, like, Jessica Simpson. The gal's a singer. Mm-hmm. But you know what? She's not making much money off of her singing anymore. That's She's right. got an apparel line that's making like $1 million. Ways that were outside the box. And you've got to be willing to be flexible and adaptable to whatever the market is demanding. It doesn't mean that you got to go like, I'm not going to suddenly go become a lawyer. But, you know, it's what's in my wheelhouse. Well, I'm doing more public speaking. It's a different spin on what I've always done in front of the camera. But now I'm doing it in front of a live audience.
Absolutely. I think that's, you've really hit the nerve, because pivoting your business, I think, is important, because you need to know what's working at that point and what's not. Otherwise, you just, you know, once it goes down and if you don't bring it back up, then it's quite a slump.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think you need to learn how to be firm without being aggressive, you know, being stern and being like, these are my boundaries and I won't let you cross them. Listening. Monique Chiquet, who's the head of Chanel Global, had spoken at a Harvard event at Asia Society here in New York. And when she was sort of climbing the ranks and was underneath Mickey Drexler, who is now the CEO, I think, of J. Crew, one of the biggest pearls of wisdom she imparted upon the audience, which was all women that day, was that he told her to shut up and listen. Like, women tend to be such bad listeners, and there's so much that you can glean when you're evaluating decision-making by just listening. And people know when you're listening, and listening actively as opposed to passively. Taking initiative, like reading everything that there is out there about your space and creating your own opportunities. I mean, a lot of the speaking opportunities that come my way is because I'm on my Twitter feed every day mining for conferences and events that are being hosted in my area where I think I'm ripe to be a speaker. And the reason I lobby for that is, A, of course, I want to invite my Lady Drinks contingent, but there aren't a lot of South Asian women who are represented on a lot of panels. And we live in New York. I live in New York City, for God's sakes. I don't understand why, you know, a panel is so homogeneous. So, right. You know, I'll lobby to that and take the initiative and say, I should be on your panel because I think I could be somebody who lends something to the overall message of the event that you're hosting and creating my own opportunity. And then I guess the final thing, and I say this all the time, but I can't credit myself with coining this term because I learned it from a women's empowerment class a couple of years ago, but you've got to take care of yourself first, and not in a selfish way, but in the way that airlines tell you when you get on the flight and they're walking you through what you do with that oxygen mask if the plate goes down. Don't put it on your kid first. Don't put it on your neighbor first. Put it on yourself first, because that sort of self-sustenance is going to affect all the other roles that you're going to play in your life.
Absolutely. I think those are some amazing pearls of wisdom. And you're so right. I think, have you read that book, Essentialism?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And And I've really learned to say no. I used to be the people pleaser, the crowd pleaser. I used to be like, oh yeah, you want this? Here, come on, let me do this for you. And now I'm like, no, this is my path. This is what I'm doing. And if it doesn't fit it, I'm not going to do it. But yeah.
And you know, in this day and age of social media and Facebook,
oh yeah.
Like even if someone invites you somewhere and you say no, and then 5 minutes later you show up in a post where you're at dinner with so and so and such and such, like, you know, that damages your brand. So
right.
And be like, no, I'm sorry, I'm spending time with my family tonight, or I'm spending time with my good friends tonight. I'm sorry I won't be able to make that event. And just, you know, be upfront about it. Don't feel like you have to apologize. It's your life.
I love that. That is so true. Awesome. So, Joya, if you could offer a first-time entrepreneur only one piece of advice about funding or money, what would it be?
Well, as I said before, you've got to talk to a lot of people and just to educate yourself. But I think that one of the mistakes I made when I first started out is that I only needed to host my own events, or I need to only go to events in the women's networking space. And the thing is that you could glean so much knowledge, surprisingly, from something that might be totally tangential to what you do. So, for example, Samsung Galaxy was launching their new phone the other day. I'm not a technologist, albeit I am a business reporter and I have a passing interest in the Samsung S6. But, you know, going to that event, you might be surprised who you might meet or ideas that you might come away with that you can actually implement in your business. I'm hosting an author at the end of the month, Amy Wilkinson, who's written a book called The Creator's Code. And what she's done is she's interviewed like some 200 successful CEOs and founders of startups, including Starbucks and Tesla and Dropbox and Spanx and PayPal. And she's kind of whittled it down to the 6 top traits that all of them have. And one of them is that you can take an analogy from another business that works really well and figure out a way to implement in your own business. So, for example, the Via single serve coffee cups that Starbucks has. Howard Schultz discovered that in technology that people use to freeze red blood cells for transport. And that's the technology he's transplanted into making coffee in single serve portions. And it's a huge revenue driver for him today.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So don't feel like you always have to go to events that are only in your space. Take a Russian filmmaking class, take an art class, go to, you know, a sex and medicine summit. You might be surprised what you might learn.
Love it. All right. We're almost at the end of it. So, Jaya, we want to do our lightning round where we can get to know you more intimately.
Sure.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Awesome. So what trophy would you want on your mantle?
$1 million check.
I like it. What is your guilty pleasure?
Scotch. Isla Regan nice. Scotch.
Nice. What are you currently reading?
So I'm reading Amy Wilkinson's Creator's Code, and Laura Vanderkam, one of my favorite authors, has just written her third book on time management, and it's called I Know How She Does It.
Oh, nice. I read her first book. I think, is it Morning Ritual?
What Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast.
Do. That's right. That's right. I read that one. Nice. I'll look out for that one.
I'm hosting her on June 18th. You should.
Oh, nice.
You should come for dinner.
I wish. If I'm in New York, I will come. I promise.
Yeah.
Sounds good. What is your one productivity hack?
Oh, my God. People make fun of me, but I make lists. I make lists for long term. I make lists for short term. And then I prioritize from 1 through 6 what needs to get done, what's a must have, and what's a nice to have.
Nice. And do you check them off?
Yes. I create a little box next to each one and I check it off.
Yes. Yes. You know, there's an app called TickTick. It's really fun if you want to look at that one.
TickTick as in TikTok?
Yes, like TickTick.
Uh-huh. I'll have to check that off.
Yes. What is your personal motto?
Dream big and be specific.
Oh, I like that. And what would you do different if you were given another chance?
Oh, my God. I'm like a quintessential worrywart. I worry about everything all the time. And I think that if you have the ability to just keep at it, keep at it, keep at it, you're going to come out on top eventually. But it's just like, stop worrying. It's so much wasted energy. And wallowing in the rejection, you know, that's another thing. It's just like, just get back out there and do it again.
I love that. I think that's so apt. I love it. Thank you so much, Joya, for taking the time out. I know you're super, super busy, and for coming and talking to all of our women entrepreneurs. You're doing some amazing things, and we really look forward to hearing more.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joya.
This concludes another episode of Womenpreneur Strategies for Success. Be sure to visit us at womenpreneursuccess.com so you don't miss any of our tips from some of the industry's leading entrepreneurs, investors, and business owners. Remember, you've got the will. Let us help you find the way. Until next time.